Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Glenn the Geek here from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 12th, 2012, episode 486. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I ride a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here on Horses in the Morning. And, you know, I say September 12th, which just makes you realize that yesterday was September 11th. And, of course, you know, it's hard to go through a day like that and not take a moment to reflect on September 11th. And Glenn, I just want to tell you what a great job you did putting together the show for September 11th yesterday. I had a lot of people comment about it and say it was – it was a really good job, so thank you, buddy.
Well, it was. I'd like to say it was a pleasure to do, but to be honest, it was hard to do. It was hard to put that one together. It was hard to do all those interviews all day, and then it was about 8 o'clock at night that I put the show together, and pretty much by then I was an emotional mess. So it was, but it, I thought it was important to do.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And you know, it's just one of those things that we try to move forward and we try to love each other a little bit more every day. And you know, that stranger on the street, it just remember when the September 11th happened and the feeling of neighborly and community that you felt, you just try to emulate that. And September 11th is a reminder of that and all the people and the way that the country came together. So it's just one of those things where everybody I saw yesterday, I just smiled at. I'm like, hello. Hello, neighbor. I'm sure they thought it was crazy, but that's what that day does to me. It makes me love everybody. So
if we hear some knocking on the door and there's a couple of white coats, will you let us know before they cart you off?
I'll let you know. I'll let you know. But it was a fantastic show. Well done. And we've got a pretty good show today. Jennifer, what is on today's show?
On today's Wacky With or Without a Crappy List Wednesday edition, headlines and horse adventures abound as our heroic co-host blaze through the top topics of the day. We'll have a click or two of training from Shauna Koresh, and our usual visit from thehorse.com provides a helpful hearing on anhydrosis, and toss the calorie counting out the window for the day and have a happy chocolate milkshake day, everyone.
Dude, every
really?
Day it's something like that. Like, she's like, it's donut. I think she's making all this up. Donut day, people. Oh,
well, you know
she's
what?
Just doing this as an
I love
excuse.
Chocolate milkshakes, so I could go out and get a chocolate milkshake today, and I'd have an excuse because it's a day.
Hey,
you have to.
You know, I told you every time I go to a horse show, afterwards I allow myself to have French fries. So
yeah.
I don't know why. It's just I just don't eat French fries except for after a horse show. I feel like I've earned it. So we stop over at a Burger King, and I'm like, Chad, do you want anything? Do you want a milkshake? He's like, give me an ice cream. I said, don't you want a milkshake? He goes, no. No more. No more milkshakes. Recently, Burger King has been they put all the calories for the food on the board. And do you know how many calories a tiny, small milkshake has?
Hold on. La, 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 go ahead. La, 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 la Wow, that many.
The large milkshake has 1,500 calories.
Oh, my
God. One milkshake. Because they use oil or whatever, and it's disgusting. So, right. Yeah, if you're going to do it yourself. Get some frozen yogurt in there, whatever you need to do, because 1,500 calories is like your whole day.
I really like the Wendy's milkshakes. I think that they're the best milkshakes ever, and I'm sure that they do not have that many calories. I'm looking it up right now.
They're called Frosties. Get it right.
No, they have milkshakes now. Actually,
milkshake. Oh, well, then if we're going to give milkshakes, as much as I hate Chick-fil-A, I love their Chick-fil-A Oreo milkshake. Oh, my God, so good. See? Anyway, talking about.
See you later, guys. So, I'm going Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
All right, well, I am happy to say that the Wendy's chocolate milkshake has less calories than the one you just described.
By how many? 20?
It only has 900.
Good Lord. Okay. And is that the small or is that the large?
That's the small.
Ah, it's more then. It is more. The small had 500. So all of it's ridiculous. Please, just go ahead. Help yourself. It's chocolate milkshake day. Whatever you need to get by, Glenn. Whatever you need.
Jamie's totally ruined my day now.
Good day.
My Daily Winnie goes out to all the geeks in the world because it is Geek Nirvana Day. Why, you ask? Is this the day of all geeks, the day we all wait for every single year? And that is because it's Apple Announcement Day. It's the day Steve Jobs used to. It's the day Steve Jobs used to come out every year in his black turtleneck, and he used to stand on the stage, and he used to wow all the geeks all over the world with the new things that are coming out. Well, this year he won't be there. This is going to be the first time, you know, in a very long time that that Steve Jobs will not be here. So
who's going to do it?
His the guy who's in charge now. See, I don't even remember his name. See, that's how unimportant I think he is. But he's going to be there, the new guy, and he's going to do it. And what we're expecting is an iPhone 5. That's what everybody's expecting. Now, Apple usually keeps this stuff pretty secret. So but the geeks make a 2 months out of predicting what's going on. And you see all these pictures show up on the blogs that it might be the new iPhone 5. And then when it's really somebody just, you know, cut it out of cardboard and took pictures to get press. But today is the announcement. I've been holding off because I'm due for a new phone. I have an Android now, and I really want to go to an iPhone because I just want one that actually works. And the Apple, you know, I've been waiting for this day. This is the day I've been waiting for. They're expecting a bigger screen. They're expecting it to be 4G, to have the new iOS 6 operating system. So we'll see what they actually announce today.
Well, it's about time you got an Apple phone. I mean, I don't even know what that other stuff you've always had. And it'll change your life. It will change your life. However, bigger, I don't think I could take bigger because I cram my iPhone in my back pocket upside down when I ride and I blast my iPod coming out of my iPhone. Any bigger, it might not fit in my back pocket or it'll interfere with my dressage saddle.
They said, I don't know that the actual form factor is going to be bigger, but the screen's going to be bigger. I don't know what they're. We'll find out. We'll find out later today. Starts at 1 o'clock, the announcement. they used to broadcast this live, but the problem they had was it would crash every website that put the stream on, including Apple's. They couldn't keep it up because there were so many people around, millions of people watching it, and they couldn't keep it up. The Internet couldn't handle it, so they stopped streaming it live.
You lost me. I didn't even pay attention to that. That was too techy. I don't even know what you said.
All right. Well, let's get on to something you do.
All right. I'm going to tell you a quick story, and I'll get to the Winnie at some point in the middle of the story. But this story is about a man named Jerry Hoover. Jerry Hoover has been the field master for the Cheshire Foxhounds for a very, very long time. Jerry has been out every Tuesday, every Thursday, and every Saturday morning at the kennels at 7 a.m. sharp after having ridden from his house, rain or shine, for like I said, a very, 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 very long time because Jerry is 82 years old. How awesome is that? So this guy, Jerry Hoover, fox hunts and he whips, he works the hounds, master of hounds, or what, a field master, whatever they call it. He's 82 years old, but on September 11th, the next hunt, he put an American flag on the front of his helmet cover, and he has worn it every single ride since, inspired by September 11th. Well, last month, there's a guy that fox hunts with them on his four-star event horse. Fox hunts with this group all the time, and his name is Boyd Martin. You might have heard of him. Boyd Martin noticed that Jerry wears an American flag on his helmet. He returns from the Olympic Games, and some people from the hunt were milling around, and they all saw each other, and Boyd ran in the barn, grabbed his saddle pad from the Olympic Games with the American flag emblem on it, and handed it to the people and said, hey, give this to Jerry.
Huh.
Gave his Olympic saddle pad to this 82-year-old man who is proud to be an American. The next morning at the farm, the people tack the horse up, bring it over to Jerry. They're like, here's your horse. And he's like, what is that saddle pad? And they're like, oh, by the way, Boyd Martin gave that to you. It's the one he used in the Olympic Games. And the only thing he could say was, I am humbled. I am humbled. So just a really cool story. Boyd Martin, Daily Winnie, Jerry Hoover, just an amazing guy. So I actually, if you hit refresh, Glenn, I put a picture of Jerry with the saddle pad in our show notes. So, Jennifer, maybe you can post that on our Facebook page. This is the cutest guy you've ever seen. An 82-year-old man out there galloping around with the foxhounds with the actual saddle pad that Boyd Martin used. So just a cool story.
Very good. Well, that you have me crying here again this morning. All day crying yesterday. Jeez. Thanks,
Jane. That is a great story. Yeah. Well, let's move on. We'll post a picture of it on Facebook. But we do have really bad ads on Friday. I'm going to be here. No horse shows for me this weekend, thank God. And we're going to do really bad ads. So what's the prize, Glenn?
There was a product that came out this year that got a lot of press called Fly Armor. We might have even talked about it here on this show. And it's this stuff this guy invented that you put it around, I don't know, Jennifer could probably explain it better. We even had him on the show and it's hard to explain. But it's an area protectant. You attach this little thing, clip thing, to your halter or your saddle. You can put it anything that stays on the horse. And it has this stuff that goes inside of it, and this stuff that goes inside of it protects your horse. And what happens is it protects your horse from flies and bugs in an area around the horse. It's like that ad you've seen for the people that are wearing the little hip thing, and it protects them from flies and puts a bubble over them. Have you seen that ad on TV? Well, this fly armor stuff.
I just Googled fly armor, and basically it's like you can put it on your cheek strap for your for your bridle, and it apparently repels the flies from your horse's face.
Well, we have a gift pack of fly armor for you this week, and I realize it's coming to the end of fly season some places. Other places, like where Jane and we live, it's not the end of fly season. They're just starting. So we have a gift pack of fly armor for you. It's flyarmor.com, isn't it, Jamie?
I don't know. I saw it on SmartPack.
Okay.
It's a Big D's, Dover, Horse.com, SmartPack, ValleyBet. It's a flyarmor.net.
And we just got our first pack of it, and we're just trying it on Beaker. We just started using it today, so we'll have to let you know because the flies are out here. So we'll give you a report, but we're giving that away on Friday for really bad ads. Get them into Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com. Now, you went to a little show over the weekend, speaking of which I have to say first, I saw we posted the picture of you on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page, you and Jet, and I have to say first how good-looking your American helmet was.
Isn't that cool? I got that from horsenation.com. You know, everybody, all our listeners voted, and I won the American flag helmet, and it is a conversation piece in cross-country because it is such a beautiful helmet, a 1K helmet, and it is just awesome. It's awesome, and everybody commented about it. But you do, that is the photo before cross country as I tried to muster up a smile because I was absolutely terrified. I was going to go do my first training ever on Jet, and I got to tell you, you know, you love it when I give you the stories of him being absolutely crazy and spinning, trying to run back to the barn, doesn't want to go and warm up, horses get next to him and he freaks out. Actually, he didn't do any of that. He was so good. It's almost like he said, I'm in training level now and I'm going to be a big boy. And so he was like really good. He only tried to buck me off and warm up once. So that is
wow, that's a record.
I know. It's so funny, too, because my coach Barb, everybody is, like, trying not to say anything because he's being so good. And in dressage, he was so good. And in cross-country warm-up, he's being so good. She's like, go jump this one. I go jump my first jump. Boom, he starts bucking. And that was it. And Barb's like, well, he is still Jet after all. He's not going to completely change. But you know, when I walked the course, and Jennifer, maybe you can attest to this and our listeners too. Okay, so you're out walking your cross-country course. And when you there's a huge move from novice to training. Like, there was one where we had 7 A, B, and C, and it was a table, 3 strides to a ditch, 3 strides to a skinny brush, which was 3-6 with the brush on it. It was huge. And as you're walking these courses, I realized very quickly to not get anywhere near the jump. I would walk the course, and I would stop about 20 feet away from the jump, and I'd go, okay, I see it. Let's move to the next one. And I walk it with Barb. She's like, what are you doing? Why? I'm like, I don't want to go up to them. I don't want to see how big they are. I just walked up to it, I looked at it, and I kept going.
Right. You know, and the worst thing you can do is when you have ditches and drops, don't ever stand on the landing side and look back.
Yeah, no, definitely not. No, thank you. no chance. And so there was one jump, actually fence 8, which came after the ditch, and I looked at it, and I got about 10 feet from it, and for some reason I could not visualize myself getting over that jump. You know, you try to do like that positive visualization, and I thought, I think my course is going to end at fence 8 because that's really big and it's huge. And I couldn't see it, but we got over fence 8. We did when we did our dressage test, I thought, wow, there's a lot more improvement I can do there. Like, I didn't feel like I really collected them as well as I should and done all this stuff. So I did get them in there, and we were actually sitting in 6th place. Out of 25, and I didn't even feel like I could have, like, I felt like I could have done better. So I really feel I've got room for improvement there. So I was ecstatic with that. We go on across country, and this is Southern California, and they have boulders on course, and it was Copper Meadows. So if you want to see any of these, just Google Copper Meadows. Huge house-sized boulders on the cross country course, and they put the jumps kind of in throughout these huge boulders. And I walk in the course with Barb, and fence 4 is when you see the first boulder. And I look at it, and I'm like, that's ridiculous, because fence 4 kind of comes right next to the boulder. And Barb's like, don't worry. For some reason, horses never spook at these. They never even look at them. I'm like, okay, so I didn't worry about it. She lied? She lied to me. I come up to fence 4, and Jet, by the way, the jump is, I mean, it's pressed up against this huge house-sized boulder, and Jet will get nowhere near it. He starts running sideways about 10 strides off. Like, I'm pulling left, right, I'm kicking. So by the time we get up to fence 4, we're actually sideways at it. And I do not know how, but somehow my horse flings himself over this jump while still staring at the boulder to his right, jumps the jump. We land in a total heap on the other side. I have no stirrups. I'm hanging halfway off his neck. And fence 5 is about 6 strides away. So he looks at fence 5, and he's like, okay, we're past the boulder. It didn't eat me. I'm going to that jump. Well, I'm hanging off the side of him, and I have no stirrups. And it's just like a big mess. So actually I had to circle him. Like two strides in, I'm trying to get myself together. Two more strides, I realize there's no way I'm going to do it. And then about one stride later, I finally get him circled. So we circled right before fence five. So they did give me a refusal, but it was not a refusal. I actually turned away. So he didn't know any difference. So his learning experience was you still have to jump, even though there's huge house-sized boulders that are going to bite your feet, and you can circle. So it was great for him. We actually finished in time. We did not have any time penalties. That was the fastest I've
ever
jumped.
Even with the circle?
Yes.
Even with your circling? Wow.
Even with the circle, we finished, so no time penalties. And then the next day, he got a little green at the in and out because it was right in front of the judge and the timer and all the stuff. And he just kind of looked at it, chipped in, dropped a rail. So we actually finished 15th out of 25. But I would have thought I won the Kentucky Derby that day. I was so excited. I'm still am. I mean, just to finish. And I realized I've been trying to go training for 16 years. That 16 years since the last time I did it. And stuff
wow.
when I was 19 did not look very big. At almost 35, freaking huge.
You know what?
Funny how, it is funny how that happens, isn't it?
Right?
Pretty. You're 5'2", maybe 5'3". Pretty
uh-huh.
soon, you go up any higher, the jumps are going to be bigger than you.
I know. It's weird. But I just was like, this is amazing. When I was 19, I'd had my horse for 10 years already, and he was, like, so good. At 19, I'm like, this is nothing. Bring it on. And, of course, at 30, almost 35 next month, I am like, I have to go to the bathroom. I'm going to throw up. So, huge difference. But we made it through. Thank goodness.
Well, good. That sounds great. See, and I'm not disappointed. You can even make a good day interesting on the show. Now, you know, when the trailer breaks down and you're stuck in the middle of the desert at 120 degrees, that can tend to get funny. But I'm glad you had a good day. That there wasn't too
well, I will tell you, Glenn, and I'll send the picture to Jennifer right now, that the drive home was a little hairy, and we actually had to pull over because there was some sort of crazy storm that happened while we were driving home, and it actually broke power lines and stuff. So I'll send you guys a picture of the storm on the way home, and you'll see. They had to close down the freeway. It was crazy. It was crazy.
Was that a boom?
It was some sort of major dust storm, and you're not even supposed to stop your car because we are so far south that you can actually, on the left is the United States and on the right is Mexico. And it keeps saying, you know, there's signs on the road, do not pick up hitchhikers. Yeah, thanks for that information, duh. Don't pull over here, don't stop. You know, and of course, it was scary. So it was the kind of place where you just wanted to keep driving, but we had to stop. So I'm sending the picture to Jennifer now, and it's a little bit intimidating. Amazing.
And you didn't know your truck needed bulletproof glass when you went to horse shows, did you?
No, I had no idea.
Well, I'm glad that went well. That's terrific. And, you know, Jet, I tell you what, 2 years, we're going to be there watching you at Rolex.
Maybe three. It might take three.
I keep thinking positive for you, and you keep pushing it back. Hey, there's something going on in Keeneland right now that is doing okay. It's comparable to last year, apparently, and that's the Keeneland yearling sales that are going on right now. And we talked about that on Monday as it being a barometer of the economy and the world of thoroughbred racing. Well, they did have one that sold for – well, I won't say what he sold for. Why don't you listen? I have the audio of this particular horse. As a matter of fact, they introduced the horse, too. So you want me to just play it?
Yeah, go for it.
Hip number 131, Kinsabaid and sales agent to Bay Colt by Distorted Humor, Atamushka by Empire Maker, by the Sire Breeders' Cup Classic winner Drosselmeyer. Distorted Humor, now 8 stakes winners this year, had a graded stakes winner yesterday in Canada. Second City won the Grade 3 British Columbia Derby. This colt out of the versatile race mare Mushka. You'll see on the monitors, Mushka getting awarded first place in the Judmont Spencer Stakes here at Keeneland in 2009 upon the disqualification of Proviso. She was a graded winner on dirt, turf, and right here on the Keeneland Poly Track. She was also second at the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic out of that great mare, the first foal out of Millionaire Mushka by Distorted Humor.
Oh, my. Who give 500 to start here? 500. 500 here in the middle of 100 to 100 here in the middle of 2-1-2. And 1-D-1 of the 200. 100 here in the middle
of that's not $100, by the way.
I was...
200, 1-2-3. 3 in the middle of 2 in the middle of get 3. 200, 3, 4. 300, 4. And 300, 400. 3, 4, 5. 400 here in the middle of the you're right now. 400, 5, 4, 5. At 400, 500. 400 here in the middle of the middle of 4 here in the middle of 5. We're 400, 5. At 400 on bow 5. 400 here in the middle of 5. 400 here in the middle of 5. At the back 600. At 500.
By the way, at this time in an auction like that, it's not a good time to stretch.
At 550, 600. 550 in the middle of 50. 600 back 50. At 600 down 50. 50 in the middle of 50. 600 and 50. 650 on bow. 657, 657. At 650 now 750 in the middle of 7. At the back 7 now 57, 50. At 7 down 57, 5800. 50 now, 8, where is 758? It's 751 of 800. 800 here in the middle of 50, 850, 8 in the back, 50, 50 in the middle of 50, 50 in the middle of 59, 9, 1 of 9, 859, 851 of 900. 900, don't wait too long, 859, 850 in the middle of 9, 50 in the middle of 9, where 859? 859, 8950, 900 here in the middle of 59, here 50, where 9950, 9950, now 1 million, 950 in the middle of 1, 950 now 1 million, where do you want to give a million? 950 in the middle of 1, 951, Mushka. 950, now a million, 951 of a million, and now a million, one bow, you're out, million here, number one, two, million here, million, one, two, one, two, and a million, one, a million, two, you're back in quickly, million, one, two, and a million, one, a bobo, two, number two, number one, here, number two, and a million, one, down, two, and a million, one, two,
gives you goosebumps,
top man, million, one, two, number two, number two, number two, number two, million, one, a million, two, and million, three, number two, three, bows in, and one spot, name, two, three, and a million, two, a million, three, number two, three,
this is a yearling, people,
million, two, million, three, down, three, and a million, two, a million, three, number two, number two, number two, 4, a million, 3, 4, at a million, 3, a million, 400, 300 here in the middle of the bow, and the bow to do up to you, man, million, 3, 4, at a million, 3 on Jeff, 4, 300 here in the middle of the 4, everybody's up with Jeff, 3, 4, fine, at a million, 4, a million, 500, 400 here in the middle of the 5, 4, 5, million, 4, a million, fine, at a million, 4, battles on, million, 4, a million, fine, at a million, 4, a million, 5, 4, 5, 600, 500 here in the middle of the 6, 500, a million, 5, million, 6, at a million, 5, a million, 600, 500 here in the middle of the 6, 500, 500, 600, million, 5, million, 6, at a million, 5, now 600, million, 500 here in the middle of the 6, 500, 500, 600, 1,000,000, 5, 6, 1,500 here in the middle of the 6, no, I'm waiting on you, 1,500,000, 5, 1,000,000, 6, 500 here in the middle of the 6, now 7, 1,000,000, 6, 7, back row, 1,000,000, 7, at 1,000,000, 6, 1,000,000, 7, 600 here in the middle of the 7, Jeff takes a lead, or I'm sorry, Jeff's out now, 1,000,000, 6, on bow, 1,000,000, 7, at 1,000,000, 6, 50, now 7,
good lord,
a little weak, 1,000,000, 6, 50, 1,000,000, 7, at 6, 50, now 7, 6, 50, in the middle of the 7, the middle of the 7, 6, 50, now 7, at 1,000,000, 6, 50, 7, 6, 50, now you said that before, 1,000,000, 6, 50, 7, 6, 50, in the middle of the 7, that might be the one, you know, 1,000,000, 6, 50, 1,000,000, 7, 6, 50, in the middle of the 7, the middle of the 7, now 7, 6, 50, 7, 1,650 in the middle of 7, the middle of 7. Are you on 2,650, 1,700? 650 now 7. They have a notion there, bow. 1,657, 1,650, and think about 650 now 7, 1,650, and I have good luck. Jeff, $1,650,000. Thank you.
Hit from for 131. Can somebody
there,
sell?
There you go.
Unreal. So here's what I, when I listen to the auctioneer, and I'm bidding on a horse. Or I'm bidding on something. You know, they're like $100. I'm like, me. They're like $200. I'm like, me. $300, me. You know, you just like bid. I get so excited that I'll bid against myself. Thank God they realize I have the last bid. Because I'm like, me, get prayer, prayer. However, I would like to point out that I would never, ever bid against myself if it got a $10 million for a freaking yearling. Good Lord.
We love to watch. I was thinking two things. One, we love to watch the car auctions that you see all the time on TV. Velocity had one on from Dallas, and this one was Meacham. I think it was Meacham. And last week we were watching it, and do you know what one of the cars went for? $5.5 million for a Porsche.
What?
Like, oh my God. It was a Porsche race car, and it went for $5.5 million.
Jeez,
but what's the most, I was trying to think, what's the most I've ever spent at an auction on something? And, you know, when we grew up in Pennsylvania, auctions were a huge thing. You had public sales everywhere. There were auctioneers everywhere, and they had public sales at the, Jennifer, you're right. We had public sales at the farms, and you go out and we bought tractors. We bought a tractor at a public sale and furniture at a public sale and things like that. But I think the most expensive thing I ever bought was my last Percheron. I bought at a Percheron auction. So that was probably one of the most, and that was probably $2,500 at the time.
Okay.
That's the most I've ever spent.
I was just trying to think, like, what horses I've actually bought at an auction. I've bid on a lot of them, but I bought a filly when I lived in Kentucky, and I think I spent $1,200 on her, but I'm pretty sure I was the one who bidded $1,100 and $1,200. So, because I really wanted this filly. And then I bought a Shetland pony at an auction for like $60, and I might have bid $40, $50, and $60 as well.
Well, it's hard sometimes to tell, but, you know, they're going so fast and there's so much commotion, usually at smaller auctions especially, that you're not quite sure whether you're in or not. Sometimes.
No clue. I had no clue what I was doing. I don't speak auctioneer, okay? So I don't get it.
This guy's good, too. I mean, this guy they use, he's extremely good. But when he starts off at $100, $200, I knew that I had to clarify that that wasn't $100.
Yes. Yeah. That would have taken a long time.
So things right now, it looks like that the average at the auction is, let's see here, $32 million is what the first 2 days opened at, a total of $32 million. That was 186 horses sold. There were 31% actually did not get sold, were held because they didn't hit the price they wanted. And the average sale price was $173,000.
Wow.
So far. And we got many more days to go. And usually the fancier horses come later in this auction, don't they, Jennifer? The ones that are more well-bred and
they
go for higher price.
The sale, the select sale was the first 2 days, and from here on out, it's a more generalized catalog.
So from here on out, you can probably pick one up for $300, Jamie.
Bargains yeah. everywhere.
Yeah, sure, $300,000. That's ridiculous. It's like, oh, the good ones already went. They would go for $1.75 million. But the crappy ones are coming along, and you can pick one of those up for about $250,000.
You know
cheap.
What I think of? Do you know what I think of when I hear $1.65 million to buy a yearling? Is what I think of is all of the stories we do here on the show of horses finding ways to hurt themselves. That's all I can think of when I hear $1.65 million for a horse. It's like, do you know how many thousands of ways we have found that horses can hurt themselves to the point where they're never going to work again?
See, and I appreciate you pulling that out of your hat. What I think of when I hear a horse went for $1.65 million is when you are buying a retired racehorse and they're like, oh, my God, this horse sold for $1.65 million and now he's a hunter. That's what I think of.
You can buy him for $400.
Exactly. Like, oh, he's adoptable at, the Canner website. He's on. Oh, by the way, this horse sold for $1.65 million. Idiot. You're an idiot for paying that.
Well, that's what keeps all those racehorse people in business. Hey, a couple other things before we get on to our training tip of the day. I stumbled on this by accident yesterday. It's called the Equinist, and it's spelled Equinist, Equinist.com. Jennifer will post a link on our Facebook page. But if you go to that, Jamie, it is the biggest list of horse movies that I've seen anywhere. And they really put some effort into it. I've never been to this website before. They put some effort into it because they broke all the horse movies down for the different periods of time, the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then horse movies of the 21st century. They broke them down for all these different time periods. And it's an amazing list that they've put together here.
And they've done a great job. And I was reading through these, and it's amazing how many stories of young girls who tame a wild stallion.
That's right. And how easy, apparently, that is.
I don't know. Oh, they become close to while trying to save an orphan foal. And then the next one is she falls in love with a young colt named Stormy. And the next one, she transforms the life of a wild horse named Big Spender. You know, like, No, you don't. But you're giving ideas to small children and making them think they can do it. Stop.
Now, if they put on the cover of the movie a picture of this small girl in her body cast, then it probably would be more realistic. That would be a realistic adaptation of what's actually going to happen.
That would be brilliant, Glenn. This is the true story of a young girl who tried to tame a wild stallion and now is in traction.
Being fed through a tube. That's terrible. That's terrible, but true. All right, but it is a great. It's a great list, and it is. When you go back and look at some of these movies from the 40s and 50s and stuff, there were a lot of horse movies made over the period of time. Most of them you probably wouldn't want to watch. But I came across one, and this goes back to the 50s, 1950. This was out, Francis the Talking Mule. And I think Jennifer's seen that. I think you've probably
every single one of them.
Yes. All the Francis the Talking Mule stories. I knew she had
There's
seen
more
one.
Than one.
Yes.
Wow. I had no idea.
And one other thing, before we get to our trainer tip, I have to. I don't know if you got a chance to watch the video that I posted up there. It's called Terror in the Pasture. And what this person did is they put a demon donkey out with a bunch of horses in a pasture.
Oh, I watched, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You're telling me that donkeys are not possessed by evil spirits. Did you see this donkey in this picture?
This is a really, really angry little donkey. Oh, that, or he's really in love with this mare.
It's a Tennessee Walker, I think, that he's chasing around. There's a whole bunch of horses, probably, 8, 10 horses in this pasture. And this donkey picks out this black Tennessee Walker and just runs it down. And by the way, did you catch what the donkey's name is?
Yes, I did. Can we say that on the air?
Yes, we can. The donkey's name is Hemorrhoid the Donkey. And let me tell you, he was being a pain in the ass to this Tennessee Walker.
He was, and he was right up her butt the whole time, too. So it's a great video. Yeah, you should post that on online.
And it's a mini donkey. It's even worse.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. I'm still stuck in the movies. I'm actually going back to the list you found on Equinest. Yeah. I was looking through the 80s movies, 80s horse movies, and I realized I have actually seen, every single one of these. The 80s was the time of the great horse movie. You've got Lightning the White Stallion. You've got Sylvester. You've got the Man from Snowy River. You've got Farlap. You've got the Black Stallion and possibly one of the worst horse movies of all time. And I want to put this up, and I want to say this is definitely the worst horse movie of all time, and maybe we can post this on our Facebook page and see if anybody else has a worse horse movie than the one made in 1998 with actor Bobcat Goldthwait. Hot to Trot. I've seen this, and he's a stockbroker who's really bad, but then he inherits a talking horse who's really good at reading the stock market. Worst horse movie of all time. Am I wrong?
Burn that one, huh? I don't remember seeing it, but I don't really run out to see too many movies that he's in. So.
All right, I'm going to post it. It was the 80s. I was like a teenager. I saw, a young teen. I saw every horse movie there was. So when a horse movie came out with the guy from, Police Academy, I went and saw it. Worst thing ever. I'm going to post it, Jennifer, while you guys do the interview.
All right, very good. Oh, you mean you didn't? I noticed one you missed from the 80s that you didn't put on your list was The Last Unicorn. I was so disappointed that you mentioned that.
I love that movie. The Last Unicorn. I still
remember
seeing
it. Oh, no. Tell me you actually did see it.
Oh, my God. The unicorns are in the ocean waves, Glenn. And as the ocean waves crash onto the beach, the unicorns are released. Oh, my God. How have you? Are you seriously challenging me?
All right, let's take a break for our commercial. We're going to come back. Jennifer, tell us a little bit about the interview that will come after the commercial.
We're going to be I was chatting with Shauna Koresh, our favorite on-target training gal, and we're talking a little bit about working with young horses and the benefits of using this positive reinforcement method with young horses.
Very good.
Fleeceworks manufactures pure Australian merino sheepskin and merino wool saddle pads and accessories. Their pads produce a vital thermal balancing layer to pull excess moisture and heat away from the horse's back, allowing muscles to work at maximum capacity without overheating. Fleeceworks Australian merino wool is breathable and hydrophilic, able to hold and store 35% of its own weight in liquid. A longtime staple of the medical field, Australian merino fibers have no equal when it comes to delivering a temperature-controlled, pressure-absorbing layer. The Fleeceworks philosophy, minimum bulk, maximum performance, and they have a variety of anatomically correct pads incorporating technologies and designs that address the individual needs of every horse and rider. Ask for Fleeceworks saddle pads and accessories by name at your local tack and feed store, or visit them online at fleeceworks.com. Thanks for stopping by, Shauna Koresh of On Target Training. It looks like social learning is not just for Facebookers, is it?
No, it is not just for Facebookers.
Explain to me how social learning fits into the positive reinforcement training of my young horse.
Okay, and that is a great question, and it is something that people do not recognize very often or pay attention to. But any social animal learns by, it's called vicarious learning, and they learn by emulating those around them. It starts very early with the young horse. They look to their mom to say, this is how we do everything. So if mom likes people, they'll have a tendency to like people. If mom is afraid of people, they'll have a tendency to be afraid of people. If mom, you know, so they start very early learning, how do I get along? Now, this skill for them is basically they're learning how to survive. I mean, granted, they're domesticated now, but they don't know that. I mean, in their brains, they're thinking, this is how I get along in my world. I need to learn and mimic. So social learning is going on all the time, whether they're young or old. But the younger ones are more impressionable and are less set in their ways, so they're tending to look around for guidance in how we deal with our world, and we deal with our people, and we deal with the lawnmower, and we deal with the farrier, or whatever, you know, they run into in their world. And so it's really important to pay attention to that. Like, I always try to guide people when, if they have a mare who is one of those mares that you really hope the baby doesn't have that personality.
Uh-oh.
One of the best things you can do is get that mare away from get that baby away from its mom as soon as you can, and get it with a horse that's going to be the complete antithesis. It's going to be the calm, polite, nice horse, or whatever the opposite is. Or if you have a really wary mare, you would want to try it as soon as you could. They're weaned and they're ready to be separated, you know, biologically. Put him with the bright, happy gelding who loves people. So they're going to learn by who is closest to them. So the more we can kind of pay attention to that, the better off we can be. Now, and I'm going to tell you a story about a young horse, because I think this really sums it up in how you can utilize this for your training and realizing how much they're paying attention to. And this was kind of an experiment on my part, me being kind of behavior-oriented. Sometimes I just try things that I wouldn't necessarily recommend, but it's me trying to figure out, well, how does that really work? And so we had stalls that the bottom half is solid, and then on one side, the top half was, you know, a board and then, you know, an inch and a half space, a board. So there's slats with whole gaps in between, so they could look through and watch the other session. Every time I do a session in the stall, you see a brown eye smooshed against the board watching. I mean, that's just, they all do that. You just look up, they're just totally taking it in. And so I had a little guy who was, I mean, he was probably 6 months old at this point, and he had not been exposed to clipping yet. And I had a horse who came in who had He had a fair share of other issues that I was dealing with. Clipping was one of them, but I wasn't dealing with that yet. But I knew he hated clipping, you know, but we had other things that were more pressing. So I brought him, so my little guy's in his stall, I brought this horse into the stall next to him, and I brought out the clippers and turned them on. Well, I knew what the horse was going to do. He's going to stay away from me. He's going to kind of bob and weave and do whatever he can, a little bit frantic, stay away. And I didn't chase him or anything, but I knew he'd be like that. So I said, okay, that's what I anticipated. So then I went around to my little guy's stall, and he's a pretty solid little guy, and he was the same way. He's like, oh, no, you don't. You don't touch me with those things. He's bobbing, weaving, ducking, doing the same, just like the big horse. So I said, okay, well, I got that, because that was a little out of character for him, actually. So I said, okay, clearly he watched that buzzing thing was terrifying. Don't get near it. The next day, same time of day, tried to make as many circumstances just the same as the day before, but I brought Mint into the stall. And Mint is the type, if you sit on the ground with clippers, he's going to drop his head to way down to you. I mean, he just helps you, and he's happy to be clipped. And so I brought the clippers in with him, and Mint just lowers his head and makes it real easy to clip him. And so then I go, okay, that's good. And then I go around, and I reinforce him, so he's seeing that process as well. And then I go around to the little horse, and this time the little horse just drops his head and lets me clip him. Now, this is the same little horse one day apart, but he was emulating what he saw the bigger horses doing. So that, to me, showed just how powerful it can really be. And
so
this is – go ahead.
I begs the question. So when you clipped Mint, do you – if you had gone in and clipped Mint, and Mint was just not Mint, just a regular horse who didn't mind getting clipped.
Uh-huh.
So you went in there and you shaved his ears. And the horse didn't make a fuss, but all you did was go in and shave his ears.
Mm-hmm.
Versus Mint, who didn't just get his ears shaved, he got rewarded for having his ears shaved.
Exactly.
Right? So mm-hmm. Do you think that made the difference, that the horse that he observed and was learning by observing was a horse that was being rewarded? Do you think he made that connection? Or do you think it was strictly the fact that Mint wasn't scared?
I think it was both of those things. I think that he saw that everything was calm and it wasn't anything to fear, and so that probably helped him to be able to watch it a little bit more relaxed. And he also knew about the clicker, you know, so he knew what clicking meant, and he knew what, you know, he knows click and reinforce. So he probably also saw that process going on as well. And that is something I'll do. If I have a horse who hates a tarp, let's say, you know, he's like, no, hate the tarp, I will have another horse that loves the tarp be near him. So he kind of and watches the other horse going on and walking on it and getting reinforced and nothing happening to hurt him. So it kind of, those kind of things can help set him up to, and that's even adult horses, but can help them, and it helps the babies more because they're more impressionable. But mm-hmm. It can help them to process things and see that it's okay and see that it's safe. So I always try to encourage people, don't discount. And people now have shared stories with me, but I say, don't discount how much they're going to learn socially. So now people will tell me things and go, and I did this. And, you know, there's another story I will share with you. When I first got Mint and George from BZ and John, they were really like my guinea pigs, you know, because I'd just come out of marine mammal training. I was just figuring out about horses and applying the positive reinforcement. So George was 6 months old, and Mint was 2 years old. And so I
nothing
taught...
Nothing like starting out with youngsters.
Yeah, they were really young. And so when I learned any... When I came up with an idea to teach anything, they both learned it. It was just my habit was, oh, we're both going to learn it, because I would learn a little bit. They have different personalities. So you'd see how it was a little different between the two of them. And George was full of energy and too much, and Mint was kind of quiet and a quitter, so you kind of had to bring them... You know, bring him, George, down and Mint up and get them to be level. But so it was always fun to teach them the same thing because it gave me two different personalities and figuring it out. And so when I'd think of something new, they both learned it. So now it's, you know, George is now a couple years old at this point, and I'd always taught the same thing. Remember I told you about the stall? So I had just started to teach him smile. And what I was doing is I was just touching their lip a little bit, looking for them to isolate that lip muscle to kind of start to raise it so they get the idea that it's raising that muscle, you know, raising that lip up. And so it's like a little finger target I would use. But anyway, neither of them had quite had it yet. They didn't get the smile. I was just looking for the twitching at this point. And so I was in there with Mint, and George is up against the stall watching through the cracks. And Mint kind of, you know, starts to get it a little bit, and you could just see that he's kind of starting to get it. And it wasn't a full-on smile yet, but it was, you know, he was getting it. So click, reinforce, that's good. Okay, I'm done with him. I go around to George's stall. He's standing at the door smiling. He hadn't even all the – it's like he watched and thought, I know what you're trying to get. I got it. You know, like he just solved the big puzzle. And so he was – when I came around to the door, he was like, look, I figured it out.
He's an overachiever, George.
Yeah, I was a little like, you're too smart for me. maybe smarter than me.
That's really wild, isn't it?
It's really wild. He was really precocious. He's one that, you know, caused you a lot of troubles as much as he did, you know. But he was smart. He was bright. And it was amazing.
Wow,
so
that's cool.
It was really cool.
So we're gonna lesson here is we're going to take the horse's natural hardwiring to learn from the behaviors that they see and feel in the horses around them, not just the emotional aspect, because we're all very familiar with the whole, if there's one horse in the herd that's spooked or if there's one horse in the warm-up arena that's freaked out, that's going to have an effect on the other horses in the group.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, they're actually going to be learning behavioral patterns and reactions too, and if they've got that basis, they've already got the target, they understand what the click and reward is, they've got the bridge, I'm going to get the terminology right here, they understand the bridge. If they're observing other horses learning, they're going to want to get in on the game.
Exactly.
Cool.
And it's really simple, and people tend to overlook it, so I'm kind of telling people, particularly with young horses, pay attention to what they're being exposed to and use it to your advantage.
Yeah, hang them out with the smart guys. Well, thank you once again, Shauna Koresh, ontargettraining.com, my favorite training lady, and especially Beaker's favorite training lady because he was
looking. Well, thank you to Jennifer, and thank you, Shauna, for providing that training tip today. Now, I got a question for you here, Jamie. Are you aware that there's another new craze in the horse in the world that involves horses? You know how we had the whole dressage phenomenon right before the Olympics and everything? Well, now there's something called invisible horse riding, and it's a new dance that's out there. Have you heard of this one?
No, I have not. But I've.
Well, you obviously are not in tune with modern culture like I am, because everybody knows that I just keep up with everything that's hip hop. And
you
apparently, yeah, I know. And not only that, I keep up with everything that's Korean hip hop. There's a Korean rap video called Gangnam Style. I can't even say it. And apparently, equine dancing, invisible horse dancing, is very popular in this video. And Ellen had the guy over. His name is Psy, P-S-Y, had the guy over, and they did it on the show. So, and it's kind of disturbing. You'll see a little graphic of it down there on the show notes page there, Jamie. It looks like you're riding a horse without the horse, and it's very disturbing. It's every horse husband's nightmare, I might say.
It is a horrible dance. And do you remember when, and I want to go to the 90s now, there was a song, "You're going to ride that donkey, donkey, you're going to ride that donkey." That looks like what they're doing. They're riding the donkey.
Donkey, yes. And it's disturbing. Let's hope that one doesn't catch on too much. Because that, you know, like we didn't have enough bad press with the whole dressage thing, here we go. Well,
dude, I would be a really good dancer all of a sudden, though. Because I can
ride.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
And I can't dance at all. So this is an added bonus. Added bonus. Well, hey, I've got a good story for you. Something came across my Facebook page yesterday, and it was a photo of a horse out grazing. Now, he had 3 casts on his leg, but he looked happy, and he was grazing, and his name is Painter. Painter is one we talked about last week, who, you know, he won a bunch of really huge races, and then all of a sudden came down with a colitis. Then, so he's been in the hospital being treated for colitis, and he got laminitis in 3 feet. And this is a spectacularly beautiful 3 or 4 year old colt. So, just one of those, like, just breaks your heart to see a horse like him. It reminds me, sadly, of Barbaro, where you have this amazingly beautiful, spectacular horse that is wearing a cast. This horse, however, did not hurt himself in a race. He actually just got colitis, then laminitis, and then he also got an infection from the IV. So he's had just such a hard time, but apparently he's doing a lot better. The coffin bones have not rotated since the initial rotation, and the owner has gone on to say that They caught it really, really early in its first stages. They are continually x-raying it pretty much almost every day. And there's a possibility that he's going to come through when the other day it didn't sound like he was going to make it. So, Painter, pour a little out to you, my friend.
Well, I have a song. How about we play a little song and dedicate it to Painter? And it's a Templeton Thompson called A Horse That Can Fly. So let's dedicate this one to Painter.
Satisfy my soul, free my wild side. My wheels have been spinning like crazy in my head. Gotta get back to living before I forget. My sights are set where that green grass is. A good running start to get me over that fence. Yeah, yeah. The weight of this world really gets me sometimes. There's a freedom inside me I've been missing so much. Gonna kick the gates wide open and leave a big old cloud of dust. Yeah, 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 yeah. I need somewhere to run, somewhere to rock, a fresh pair of wings and a long stretch. Strong, tall wind and a horse that can fly. Yeah. Giddy up, look at what lies on the horizon. Second star to the left and straight on till morning.
I have goosebumps everywhere. What a fantastic song. We dedicated that one to Painter, who's currently healing in the hospital. That's Templeton Thompson, Horse That Can Fly. My gosh, I have goosebumps everywhere. I can't take the emotion, Glenn. I can't. It's just too much.
Yesterday And today, hey, I want to get, if you don't mind, I want to get Michelle in on this conversation before we do the horse thing. I got something I want to ask both of you. So I'm going to hey, Michelle.
What's coming?
Okay, so I got a question for you guys. So there's this new app out. It's called Horse Log, and it's an all-in-one app for your smartphone, and it tracks your horse's health. We've seen these apps before. This seems to combine a whole bunch of different things. I haven't tried it yet, but there's something in it that caught my attention. And one of the sections in this horse app, where you can log all your horse's activities, appointments, all that crap, is the budget section. Users record all their expenses and view reports on where their money is going. I don't know one horse girl that wants to know how
yeah,
much
I don't
they're
know.
Spending. See, I knew it.
I
you
really
know.
Don't.
It is the least favorite part of my week when Chad makes me sit down at the computer and log all my expenses and how much I'm making with the horses because, you know, I teach lessons and I spend. Do you know how much money I made in August?
Negative $1,000.
No, I made $12 in August. $12. And by the way, that does not include, hey, I'm going to look around, make sure he's not listening. It does not include any of my riding lessons or competing. So it's kind of bad. But yeah, $12. And I like board horses and I teach lessons, but obviously August is a little bit slower, but oh my God, it about punched me in the face when I saw $12. Ridiculous.
Yeah, at least you have some income coming in from your horse activities. It just goes out.
Yeah, but you have a job. This is my job.
You know, when we had our big boarding farm, we had probably had 20 horses at the time. We had a working student. We made her track everything for a month. I mean, everything she did, every little piece of sawdust that was put in the stalls, we tracked every flake of hay. We tracked everything to see what the actual numbers really came out to. And what it really came out to is you make no money boarding, and you're pretty much earning as a boarding stable owner about 50 cents an hour. It was just ridiculous.
I kept a friend's horse at my place for a while, and I calculated it out, and it was costing me money to keep my riding partner's horse at my place. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's true.
I used to think my boarders paid for my horses. I'm like, well, you know, I've got a couple extra horses. No, it's a lie. Totally
a lie. You know, and I just got the box in the mail with my new winter blankets for my two horses. They got matching blankets with their names embroidered, and they're very nice, and I was so excited I opened them up. And I can't remember the last time I went and spent that amount of money on my wardrobe.
Never. Never. No. I'll tell you that right now. No.
I actually, those two blankets cost more than my wedding dress.
Oh, my gosh. And you know what's going to happen? Your horse is going to go out there. The first day, this happens every time you get a new blanket. I don't care how much it costs. I don't care what brand it is. The first day the horse goes out there, he will tear, rip, or do something, break a buckle. Something will happen to that blanket the first time.
I put the one on Jack, my quarter horse, and he was feeling quite nice that he had his new blanket, and he looks down and kind of looks at it and then bites it and pulls it from his chest. So, yeah, no. We'll see.
I can't believe you paid more than your wedding dress. That's fun.
That just means, Glenn, that means that she got a really good deal and was very responsible when she purchased her wedding dress.
Yes.
Michelle, I don't know if I told you this story before, Glenn, but my dad, when I'm getting everything ready for my wedding, and we are waiting on Dr. Jones, so we have some time to kill. If my dad's listening, he knows exactly what I'm going to say, because I don't think anybody has ever let him live this down, nor will it ever live him down. You know, I'm coming to my dad, I'm like, listen, I got to buy my wedding dress. I know you want to pay for it. So this is pretty much what, give me a ballpark. So he gives me the ballpark dollar amount, and he says to me, he goes, Jamie, when you go shopping for this wedding dress, you just make sure it's something you can wear again. I said, Dad, we don't wear our wedding dresses twice, Dad.
You get a divorce. kids or divorce already planned.
Exactly. Exactly. You better make sure you can fit into this next time around. My God, Dad. What do you think I'm going to do? Like, put it on and go out? I even said, like, what do you think I'm going to wear to the movies? What are you thinking? I go, when was the last time you saw a woman walking around in a wedding dress? Never, unless she was at a wedding. I'm like, wear it again. You are insane. Insane. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Hey, something else disturbing. Did you guys see the LS3? Did you see the video of the LS3, which is, by the way, the legged squad support system, which are mechanical robotic horses that were developed by Boston Dynamics, who seems to be the robot people in the United States, and it was developed by the U.S. Marine Corps and Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, and what they're developed to do is be pack horses. But when you watch the video, it is disturbing how much they made these robots look like horses when they're walking, when they're running, when they're trotting.
For Star Wars fans, they look like AT-ATs, Glenn.
Yeah, that's what I can imagine. Yeah.
It is incredibly disturbing, and you know someday the robot's going to take over the world and kill us all. And this is the...
Yeah, this is going to...
It
says that it doesn't need a driver. It follows with computerized vision. You know, painting a picture, Glenn, this is a huge, giant suitcase on horse legs. It's weird. You can actually program it to find a GPS location. It can run. It covers 20 miles and one tank in over 24 hours. 20 miles carrying thousands of pounds of gear.
Okay, I have to see this thing. I'm Googling it.
Yeah, they have a video on YouTube of it, and it is kind of disturbing. It's just like, Anyway, it is now time for this.
It's time for the weekly health report from Horse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
Well, ask and ye shall receive. And that is what I did to Michelle last week. I said, Michelle, I need to talk to you. You need to give me some information because my horse, Jet, who competed in his first training level this past weekend, by the way, and made it through without sweating at all. I said, I need to find out more about anhidrosis. I realized not too long ago that he overheated one day this summer and like laid down and I had to give him electrolytes before he would get up and it was just, and then I realized my next riding lesson, it's 9 o'clock in the morning and it's in Arizona and it's 100 degrees outside and he's not sweating at all. So this has become quite the problem. And right before cross country after warm up, we had to douse him with ice water and just try to cool him down a little bit, get him wet. And so I wanted to find out from Michelle and Dr. Jones, exactly what is anhidrosis? Why does it happen? What's going on? How can I fix it? So we will say good morning to Dr. Jones.
Good morning. And I'm sorry to hear that you're having this issue.
Oh, my gosh. It is such a pain. Now, I'm curious to know, like, worst case scenario, you know, of course, you're going to freak me out completely, I'm sure, about this. But I want to know how common all these questions. So, Michelle, just take it away. You have
seems to have
a list of the good questions here.
Yeah, we'll start from the beginning and see if we can shed some light for you because, bummer. just starting out, Dr. Jones, can you tell us what anhidrosis means literally?
Non-sweater.
Yeah.
I think you pretty much laid that out when you your whole discussion of what happened. So
an is lack and hydrosis would be sweat, water.
Sweating, yeah. We're not sweating. We have shut down. I think you eloquently put that in good words and terms there, Jamie, and I hope I can shed some light. I'm just going to start off. I think it would be best if I started off rather than wait till the very end and say, I'm not sure if I'm going to give you any more information than you already know, Jamie. So I will try to do my best to ease your mind. How's that?
That sounds good. That sounds good. As long as I don't run outside crying and go hug my horse like sometimes
I do. No crying. So horses, obviously, sweating is how they cool when they're hot or exerting themselves.
And
so,
I also want to interject also, the other way they cool is breathing.
Okay. And so
they will increase the respiratory rate if they're not sweating. I'm sure you've seen that, Jamie.
Yep.
And that will help them cool off their body, too, because they're blowing off moisture through the respiratory tract.
Yeah. So what does it mean for a horse that doesn't sweat?
It's not the best thing. And it's not because Jamie's showing her horse and out there moving them around, that kind of thing. It's even for the horse here in Florida or Louisiana would be another ideal place that's standing in humidity and heat and can't cool themselves off on a day-to-day basis because they will sweat a little bit in the heat and humidity no matter where they are. So the problem is they will overheat and then you have some other compounding issues from that, which would be an increased respiratory rate. You get the abdominal press from their abdominal muscles, from the heavy breathing and the fast breathing and other sequelae.
What is that? What is the abdominal press? What do you mean?
That's what you say. We call it the heave line. So I've seen horses that are breathing so hard, so fast, trying to cool themselves off, that they actually will form a heave line, and it looks like they're a heavy horse, but they don't have an ounce of sweat on them.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Here in Florida, when I get a complaint that the horse is breathing pretty fast, we think of heaves. And we'll get out there and we won't find a drop of sweat on them and the temperature's rising and we'll have to put them in the anhydrosis category at that point.
Okay. And so when they sweat, it's evaporative cooling. So you're saying when they're out in a warm climate and doing their horse things without us, that they still need to be able to cool themselves.
Exactly. Exactly. Those are the severe anhydrosis cases. And I think, Jamie, you're at that point because you're not even getting a drop of sweat even with exercise.
Yeah. So, go ahead, Jamie.
Well, no, I mean, just kind of following along your line of questions. You know, I don't understand because I can't remember. I've had him for 2.5 years, and I can't remember this situation ever presenting itself before, maybe last summer. But I also kind of ride him at night. I usually ride him as the last horse of the day because I try to end on a good note. And I ride him as the last horse of the day. It's usually around 7. It's getting dark when we get done. And I never noticed it until I started taking him to these lessons that are 9 o'clock in the morning. And so I wondered if it was – is this an obvious thing all of a sudden, or does it kind of subtly come on little by little?
Majority of the cases come on suddenly.
Really?
It's basically, yeah. You don't see it in young horses. You rarely see it in young horses. It becomes more obvious in the training horses, so we can't say, well, training causes the problem, because the pasture pets or the weekend warrior horses that are out in the past puffing and not sweating don't really show us any signs, per se, because they're not working them every day.
Right.
So you can have a false reading to say, oh, it's only in horses that are at their training levels because that's when we see it. Well, that's not true because I've seen it in horses that are pasture pets that are only, like here in Florida, a lot of times people will not ride in the summertime. They'll only ride in the wintertime. But yet I'll be called out because the horse is breathing pretty fast out in the pasture.
Okay.
So, there is no predilection that I could tell you why your horse came about it this year rather than last year, except for, A, it's an older horse, but we don't know the cutoff. We don't know if it's over 8, over 6, over 10. We don't have a predilection of a cutoff age. We don't have a predilection for breeds even. And we just assume it's an inappropriate working of the sweat gland or of the receptor for the sweat gland. That's all we can surmise. We don't have an actual reason or cause for this disease.
So how common is it? Do you come across it very often in your practice?
Yes, I do. And, of course, I see it mostly in the training horses because those are the ones that notice it more obviously because they're out riding and then they take the saddle pad off and there's not a drop of sweat underneath it. And the horse is blowing like a freight train. They can't seem to get them to calm down from blowing like a freight train in 30 minutes, which they should be able to. They can't ride them during the heat of the day because they get very, very hot in temperature. They can get up to 103, 104 in the middle of the day without sweating.
Mm-hmm.
So So, well, now I'm going to start getting fine. I have a horse that doesn't sweat much. Is that different than anhidrosis?
Yes, because some horses are profuse sweaters and some sweat a little bit. The ones that sweat a little bit, I'm real thrilled to hear about because you have a hope or a chance with them. The ones that don't sweat at all, that have shut down, sometimes it takes quite a bit to get them back sweating, or they may not start up again.
Now, you said, now, can a horse, because the thing my horse actually does is he will sweat under where the girth is, because it's leather.
Good. Yeah.
So he does sweat a little bit, but, you know, aside from, the only thing I can find to do to treat him is give him the 1AC, and that is like this little, you know, powder supplement that's what everybody said, oh, put him on 1AC, he'll be fine. Is that true? What is that stuff?
It's basically all naturals. There's some vitamin C in there and some other minerals type thing. There's no scientific proof that 1AC is the cure for anhidrosis, but clinically it seems to work for most of us practitioners. So, yes, my anhidrosis horses, every April, May, I tell them to put on their calendar, start on 1AC, don't look back, put them on it for the summer, and some of them don't look back. They actually start to sweat again. I can't say it was just coincidental as a possibility, or maybe it was the 1AC that worked. But I had a thoroughbred mare here that was my own, Peggy. I've talked about her numerous times. And, of course, as Jennifer knows, she's still here. But she became a non-sweater in her older age, and she'd come in blowing like a freight train. I got beautiful oak trees in my pasture, so I know she had plenty of shade. And we put her on the 1AC every April, and we stopped every November 30th. So we didn't just take any chance. We just put her on it so that we could make sure that we don't have to worry about the non-sweater issue. It's a small amount of money to spend, but there is no clinical evidence of its ability to work.
So for other management techniques, you know, Jamie mentioned also using ice water on Jet before he performed. What other things can horse owners do for their horses that aren't sweating?
The other thing Jamie said that she does, which I highly recommend, is riding at the cooler times of the day, first thing in the morning or last thing at night. Putting the cold water on is good, but follow that, and I know Jamie did this, is sweat, scrape it off. That's the one thing a lot of people don't understand here is if a dark-colored horse, a black or a dark bay, has water, so they come up to the fence line, you spray them off with water, and then they trot off, you just insulated them with a little layer of water that can reflect the sunlight into them and heat them up even more. So you want to sweat, scrape it off so that the hairs raise up and they can do their normal cooling fashion. So you want to ice them off, and sweat scrape, ice them off and sweat scrape. And then I would continually take their temperature to make sure you're dropping the temperature, because if you're not dropping the temperature, then you need to address that issue as well, and that would probably be veterinarian-related at that point.
And I do find it amazing that people don't know to sweat scrape their horse. And so I tell them, I'm like, you just put a hot, wet blanket on your horse because the body temperature heats it up so much faster than it cools them off. And it's
right.
Amazing how many people don't, you know, half the time I'm so meticulous about sweat scraping here at my house because it is Arizona and it is super hot and the sun is out all the time. And I have a 4-H student that's been in 4-H for 8 or 9 years. Comes to me, why do you sweat scrape them? I'm like, what are they teaching you? You should know why you sweat scrape a horse.
I think most people just think you sweat scrape for aesthetics. They don't realize that it is actually a health reason.
You're probably right, Glenn. But sweat scraping is just as important as getting the water on the horse. The other thing, too, is the icing of the horse. Now, and I had two horses that called me over the weekend. They really didn't want a veterinarian to come out. They were non-clients, and they were just asking some questions. They had a fever in the horse. Could have been anhidrosis. Could have been infectious-related. I don't know. But I told them, I said, go buy a bag of ice cubes at 7-Eleven, gas station, whatever, nearby. Put it in your 5-gallon bucket. Fill it up with water. Get on gloves because your hands will go numb. Get a sponge. Sponge bath your horse with that ice water. Sweat scrape. Sponge bath, sweat scrape. Do this for 30 minutes. Take the temperature. See if it's coming down. And they don't understand that they can do the entire body from head to tail with the ice water.
Yeah. It sounds awful, but it works.
It works like a dream. It works like a dream. It will work in a fever situation. It may not bring it all the way down to normal, but it'll at least bring their fever down until the vet can get there or until you can get some help. and it will work beautifully in anhidrosis. In 30 minutes, the temperature should be almost down to normal, and their breathing should be back to normal.
So what is the prognosis for a horse with anhidrosis to go on and have a performance career?
It's good during the cold weather. most of the time, we don't have heavy shows here, of course, in Florida in the summertime. There's still some shows that go on. So a lot of my clients that do have anhidrosis horses will back off on their showing schedule in the summer and then show heavily in the winter, and that's when the points are really the highest anyway, and they mean the most. But they'll also have to ride at the cooler times of the day, and a lot of them work. So the cooler times of the day before they go to work or when they get home. So it is manageable in that sense, but it is going to be a management thing that they need to be aware of.
Yeah. So I've seen in my area, because I'm in the desert where it's hot during the day, but we're cold at night, but I've seen different rescue groups have horses listed saying this horse has anhidrosis. We're hoping for a home in Alaska. Is that dramatic, or is that a real option to find a home for a horse that's in a cooler climate?
Well, I don't think they need to go to Alaska. They go to Montana or Idaho. You're close to those two.
North Dakota.
It can
yeah,
get
North
warm
Dakota.
In Idaho, too.
Yeah, because I think North Dakota already has frost this year. So.
Yes.
But,
send all the anhidrosis horses to Canada.
Yeah. I'm not getting rid of my horse, so give me a better option here.
No, and, you know, yeah, I think what they need to do is they have to have somebody who's educated on the anhidrosis in order, because those horses can live in a hot environment as long as you provide the proper management for them. You can't just put them out in a solid pasture or sand lot that's directly in the sun without any shade or covering and without any help in trying to cool themselves off. That's just that's abuse there. So you need to take into consideration that they have a condition that needs to be managed well.
Okay. And so since this is relatively common, is there any research that you know of that's being done to figure out what's going on with these horses?
Well, of course, in my backyard at University of Florida, they're ongoing research. They've been looking at anhidrosis for over 6 years. They've got a couple different studies, and you can call the university or Google them and see what kind of research projects they have going on right now at the moment. But they've got a couple of them that they're doing as we speak. And, of course, they usually shut down in August for the anhidrosis study because that's when we'll see them, and they don't take any more cases after that. So we're a little bit behind the eight ball in advertising for them. But if you have one this year and you want to put on your calendar, hey, if the anhidrosis shows up next year, May, June time, you probably give the university a call and see if you can get on their studies.
Okay. And we on the horse.com, we have a fact sheet on anhidrosis that has some really good information. It's a two-pager, which has condensed info that can help you out if you have a horse with anhidrosis. So, Jamie, you might want to take a look at that also if you haven't already.
Oh, I definitely will. Question, is this something that he's going to have forever, or like how it suddenly came on, does it suddenly stop?
Yes, it can suddenly stop as well. We've had some horses that turn right around and start up again with sweating.
No kidding. Oh, well,
yeah.
Then what's the problem here? Fix it.
The problem is we don't know what the cause is, so we're still searching out the actual cause. Like I said, there's two thoughts or theories. Is there's an abnormality of the sweat glands, or there's an abnormality of the receptor for the sweat glands. So we don't know if it's both of them that's affected or one or the other.
Weird. All right, well, okay. Get to work on that, Dr. Jones. Help me out here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to send as many cases as I can to the university, so that might help us with the research is just supplying the cases.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you, Dr. Jones, and I'm sorry, Jamie. Hopefully things will turn around for Jet.
That's okay. Well, you know, it was just fun. It was really sweet watching my husband come down to the horse trial warm-up for cross-country with a full bucket of water and a sponge. And it was really cute. I was like, what a good husband. I'm like, come in. And, of course, Jet has – this is relatively new to him, and he wanted nothing to do with the dripping sponge
yeah,
and the husband chasing him with a bucket.
Yeah.
Well, I think you got a little bit of hope, Jamie, because you got a little bit of sweating under the girth, so that's always a good sign when they completely shut down is the really bad cases. So
it
I think you got a little bit of hope on yours still.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really tough to sit and watch them breathe like that, and it just breaks your heart. You're like, I'm sorry, run faster. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go faster.
Well, you better be careful. Somebody might be turning you in for animal abuse.
I know, right? I mean, yeah, I'm going to get in big trouble. So, listen, thank you guys for joining us. Thank you, Michelle, for coming up with a topic that I requested some more information on. And I'll check
Absolutely.
Out. We'll get the link for thehorse.com. You can find Dr. Jones at Florida Equine. I wish she lived in my neighborhood. I'd have her over all the time.
And I'd certainly enjoy it.
Thank you, guys. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank
bye.
You.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye. I swear.
Well, there you go.
All I do is hug my horse. I hug him all the time. I'm like, just thank you for still being alive. After this segment, every week, I'm like, thank you for still living.
That's what I mean. Pay $1.65 million. They don't listen to every Wednesday here and find out all the different ways our horses are going to die a miserable, horrible death.
I know. And some people just, and some of our listeners don't tune in every Wednesday, so they don't get just how bad it is as the host of this show to talk to these people week after week after week. Oh, great. It's tough, but it's good information and it's stuff everybody should know, so I'm not bagging on them. I'm so glad they come on and make us all aware of things that are going on. And I'm going to leave you with a little tease here, Glenn, because...
Okay.
Friday morning, I'm going to tell you the biggest reason ever to go hug your horse. And I'm going to tell you about the experience I had where I was out riding, and my arena's by the road, and this police officer, pulls over, gets out of the car, has a badge on one hip and a gun on the other hip. And she walks up to my gate and she says, "Hey, you got a horse named Ride the Bench here? With a gun? Well, if you're talking about Joey, then yes, I guess so." Remember, that was his
registered name. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So a lady with a badge and a gun stops
at
my house and says, "Do you have a horse named Ride the Bench?" So I will follow up the end of that story on Friday morning. That is a tease. You got to wait for it.
Oh, man. You got me going on that one. Well, you're not in jail. I didn't get a call about bail, so.
It was a week ago. It was a couple days ago. So
okay. Wow.
A lot's happened.
That's not going to have ever happened every day.
Yeah, exactly. Badge, gun, and you got a horse named Ride the Bench. I'm sorry, officer. Don't shoot me. So you'll hear the rest of that story Friday morning here on Horses in the Morning.
Don't forget to get your really bad ads into Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. We still need some for Friday morning. Thank you, everybody. Don't forget, you can listen to all the past episodes of the Horses in the Morning show at horsesinthemorning.com. If you didn't get a chance to listen to, by the way, I want to thank everybody that did post about it, and I got a couple of emails. If you didn't get a chance to listen to the 9/11 episode, that is up there at Horses in the Morning now. And thank you to Barbara and to everybody else who posted that they loved the show yesterday. I appreciate that as well. That's it for today. Say goodbye, Jamie.
Goodbye, everybody. Spay, neuter, and geld. Have a great day. Talk to y'all again on Friday.
Wrap your horses in bubble wrap. Oh, wait,
yeah.
That's too hot.
He won't sweat.